Welcome, Steve. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us. Okay. let's start with just going over your background a little. So, what got you interested in the UFO phenomenon?
Well, I've always been interested in the idea of space and going into space and all that. I was a science fiction buff as a kid, read all the books, studied physics in school. And all through my life, the reports have turned up in the odd magazine, little television show. You can't help but ignore them. You can't help, I mean, you can't help but not ignore them. Actually, I didn't say that right. You simply can't ignore these reports. They turn up throughout your life. But you can't do much about them. You can't just jump into the issue. Some do. Often they're retired, military, became investigators or joined some organization. I did none of that. But I always paid attention to it and knew that it was extremely important. So when I decided that I wanted to just completely take a different direction in life and do something that was important for me, to me, this issue was right there in front of me. And it didn't take long to figure out that that's where I should go. Better late than never, I would say. So I was 49, actually, when I got involved in this.
And so since you got involved, what has your role been? What is your role now in this?
Well, that was the key issue. You get involved in something large. What's your niche? Where can you best fit in? It's not obvious. And if you choose the wrong niche, sometimes you will miss the opportunity to engage. I went to work, a volunteer for John Mack, who was a researcher, a Harvard psychiatrist working out of Cambridge Hospital, and he had formed a group called the Program for Extraordinary Experience Research, PEER. And I went to work there, and that got me into the field. I was very excited. Wasn't a particularly good fit, though, for my background, my temperament. But while I was there, and sort of immersed in the issue for 4 months, is when I figured out what my niche was. And that was to engage the politics of the issue, the politics of UFOs, which means the resolution of the issue, which had not been done. Really, no one had formally done that. There had been some efforts to get some hearings, and the odd politician touched it briefly over the years, but there'd been no real formal effort to build a political engagement of the issue. So there it was, just waiting. So I said, fine, I'll take it, I'll do it. And I launched into the politics of UFOs by creating the Paradigm Research Group as a registered lobbyist for a number of groups, hence the name Paradigm Research Group, even though it's not a research organization.
So the work that you do is actually pressuring Congress and state people in order to...
I would prefer to say advocating for the resolution of the issue by all means. Prefer not to pressure anybody if you didn't have to, but it comes down to that oftentimes. But I'm an advocate for a resolution of the UFO ET question in our society, and that resolution is fairly straightforward. The presence of extraterrestrials has been proven beyond any reasonable doubt, regardless of what the government has said or not said, by a whole lot of dedicated civilian researchers and amateur researchers and investigators for decades. They've amassed huge amounts of evidence, along with the witness testimonies that have emerged as well. So we know that. We know that the government has withheld what it knows and withheld formal acknowledgement of the issue as part of what I would call a policy of truth embargo. It's not written down anywhere. It couldn't, because that would, of course, be counterintuitive. But we know that, and so we have a bit of a dilemma. The people have pretty much proven the truth of a matter. The government denies the truth exists. This happens a lot over the centuries. We've seen it before. So the resolution is simple. The government has to yield. They have to finally say, yeah, yes, they're here, and that's the resolution of the first phase of this issue. The acknowledgement. Then, of course, comes the post-disclosure world, where we're going to have to address a whole host of questions, which are pretty important, but we'll be able to do so because the government has stepped out of the way.
So when would you like disclosure? I mean, are you pressuring for it to happen as soon as possible? When should they disclose? When is the optimal moment for this?
Well, the first time it could have happened at all under the policy that I think that was in place was 91. The chances of it being formalized, barring something dramatic happening prior to the end of the Cold War, are very small. So the window, and the reason is simple. Well-meaning people inside military intelligence community felt that this kind of dramatic change in understanding and knowledge with all its implications happening while you've got these two powers pointing thousands of nuclear weapons at each other, it's just not a good idea. It's hard to argue with them. I mean, you could make a case that we might have even avoided a lot of that if we had disclosed many years ago, but it's not a slam dunk. So the window opens in 91, and after that, it's a matter of just when. But it's inevitable at that point. I would have thought it might have happened sooner, but if you look at the historical record from 91 forward, you can kind of see why it got pushed back, pushed back, pushed back. But in that 18 years since the end of the Cold War, the world, as we now are well aware, rather than, and this seems to be a pattern, learning from the previous war, whether it's World War I, World War II, and trying to get things right so that we can have a relatively sane, sustainable world where people have a chance for a reasonably good life. Everyone has a chance. We ended up making the same mistakes again and pursuing the same failed policies again, thus creating the basis for the next conflagration. The people are now starting to sense that something dramatic needs to happen, or we're going to end up with a major series of events in the 21st century that'll be as bad as anything we've seen before. The peace dividend didn't materialize. Movement, the nuclear weapons were not dismantled and discarded. They're still there. Could be retargeted easily. The assault on the environment didn't stop in any meaningful way. The population did not. There was no efforts to find a reasonable basis for limiting population, even eventually reducing it. That didn't happen. And a whole host of human condition issues were not resolved or approached. As a result, there's a lot of fertile ground in the world for huge dissatisfaction, which invariably translates into terrorism. So we have an even more, in a sense, volatile and uncertain world than perhaps maybe we even had under the Cold War. So people are pretty kind of irritated by that. And they're looking for answers. We can still have another major war. A few nukes get tossed into some situation and it would spread very quickly. It would be tough to contain it. We also have the potential for nuclear terrorism in the United States, which could generate all kinds of political fallout. So we've really got a very shaky situation. Now, and this is the irony. The Cold War, because of the simplicity of that dichotomy and the vast power of those weapons, sort of created a kind of stable arena. It was pretty obvious who the enemy was and what would happen if we went to war. And so there were certain rules. You don't do that and you don't do this. And if you're going to have a war, it has to be a proxy war held on somebody else's soil, things like that. And there's an order. It was kind of an order to it, but yet it was precariously dangerous. And under that situation, there was no likelihood that the acknowledgement of the ET presence would come about, because it might have, quote, unbalanced that rather odd but nevertheless somewhat effective supported situation. Now we're in a way, a more volatile, almost chaotic reality, but of a different type. The potential for bad things happening, very great, but that dramatic, draconian nuclear war thing, not so obvious, not so likely, at least right away. And so now it's kind of the reverse. The introduction of the ET reality, the acknowledgement of this presence, might serve to mitigate this chaos. right? I'm just the opposite effect of the concern that was held toward the issue before 91. And that's I find that amusing in a way. We need something to focus our attention. We need something to distract us from our old paradigm thinking, our old grudges and blood feuds, which are all ultimately ridiculously trivial in the light of the larger universe. And this would do the job. And it might allow us to then reassess and perhaps pare out the disruptive factors and variables in the world cultures and start moving towards a sane global reality here. I mean, so we can't have it soon enough, as far as I'm concerned. It needs to happen tomorrow.
What you're saying is a very positive thing for the people, but what's in it for the governments? What do they get out of disclosure? I mean, why would they disclose?
Well, it's interesting. That's an interesting statement, and you do hear it a lot, which sort of presupposes that this government is this total separate entity, and the people are another entity. Of course, the government is the people. The people and citizens make up the government. They run it. They're elected officials and whatever else. So this separation is a bit artificial, but yet we understand what one means when they say that. So it kind of makes an easy answer more difficult. Government, how can I put this? Governments serve, or are supposed to serve the citizens, which includes the government employees themselves, right? That's part of the same country, and the military employees and everything else. They're serving all of these through a social contract that ultimately provides a stable environment, a safe environment. That's the idea, right? This contract we enter into so that we can go about our affairs in a constructive way and be productive with a minimum amount of gratuitous disruptions, violence, and whatever else. I mean, this is the ultimate nature of government and the social contract. And if something facilitates that, then generally it's good for government, right? Helps them do their job, makes them look good, and they get more support from the citizens. So at a very base level, the acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence serves the government because it is a huge credibility marker for it. In other words, in general, governments rise, in its simplest form, governments rise and fall in terms of their favorability and their functionality based upon the amount of trust that is in part and parcel with the social contract. If the trust is very low, then governments don't function so well. The people don't play ball. They're resistive or apathetic. Even people in government can lose trust in their own government and their operations. So you have an increasingly ineffective institutional setup, which is what happened to the Soviet Union. I mean, nobody believed anybody, and nobody trusted anybody, and nobody cared until the whole thing just collapsed. So the truth embargo, which is a fundamental denial of reality by the state for national security purposes, required maintaining basically a lie for decades. Telling the truth is the immediate shortest distance between two points, those points being between a low level of trust to a higher level of trust. It starts a process of restoring credibility of the government and the trust that people want to have in it. It'll take more than that, but that's a good step in the right direction. And that thus will make it easier to govern and hold them in higher esteem. That's for openers. But there is a pretty substantial prize in this crackerjack box. And they know it, and we know it. That just as we've seen for some time, major technological breakthroughs can really change the quality of life and affect the, also increase the power of a state, also produce substantial economic benefits. We've known this. They come along once in a while. The Our government, and possibly others, but certainly our government, has had in its possession going back to at least the 40s. A crashed or more than one crashed vehicle of ET origin, meaning non-human, advanced technology. And that technology was classified instantly and taken into deep facilities where they've been working on it for decades with fairly substantial funds. There's evidence and indications they have made progress. They have made efforts to re-engineer, maybe even create our own versions of these craft. And this is a long story, but this technology is not trivial. The energy and propulsion system of these crafts are a new physics. And that new physics could change everything on the outside. But we have to get it out here. It has to be in public development. The perfect analogy is the nuclear science that built the bomb eventually was brought out and made available for peaceful purposes. And whatever one has as an objection to nuclear power, it has generated a lot of power. It has done it relatively cleanly, with the obviously potential accidents and nuclear waste being an issue. And they have nuclear boats and ships and what have you. So we've seen this all happen before. All right. Well, it needs to happen again with this ET tech. The energy and the propulsion systems. That technology could turn the United States economy around, could raise the United States prestige worldwide dramatically, particularly if we share that technology with other nations, and could solve an enormous number of the human condition issues that I mentioned earlier, which then reduces the amount of terrorism in the world. All of this accrues great benefits to the government that takes that road, and they know it.
Well, if so much benefit will come to the government through disclosure and through opening up to this whole other world of, you know, ET, mm-hmm. why have they not done it yet? Why are they taking so long?
The benefit we think is now understood, but the task itself is still difficult. It's the benefit is not enough. You still have to get it done, and it's a non-trivial maneuver. There have been, I guess, the simplest way to look at it is that the state had relative control of the issue through all of those years, including when the Cold War ended. So it had some control over how it would come out and what path disclosure might take. Of course, the ETs could change that. They could take dramatic action anytime they wanted to, and that would be that. But aside from that, they had some influence over how this would happen. So they want the conditions to be right. They want it to go well. Right? It's like trying to decide, when, where, and how to hold a wedding. You want just the right place, and you want the right people there, and you want the right setting because you want it to be a great wedding. Because if you don't choose carefully, it can go very badly. Same thing with this. And there were a number of variables. One of the most important for the United States military intelligence was the president. They knew that they needed to have a president running things that was appropriate for this event, that could handle it, that could deal with it, could handle the aftermath of it. And more importantly, was open to their concerns, that would listen to them, right, and not just go off half-cocked and do whatever he or she wanted to do. Pretty important matter, because that president was going to be an historical figure. So that was one issue. And as it happens, I happen to believe that in the 18 years that we have seen since the end of the Cold War, which is the opening of the window for disclosure to happen, two of the presidents were not acceptable. They just weren't. Bill Clinton was not acceptable to them. They did not want disclosure to happen under them, and neither was George W. Bush. A lot of effort was made to keep Bill Clinton a one-term president. Same for George Bush. They tried to get him out. A lot of people tried to remove him after one term. Came real close. But they both won. So there's 16 years right there that ate it up. Other factors are the usual fault of all that's going on in the world. I mean, somebody's blowing something up, invading something, this war, that war, all of which muddies the water, makes it harder to perhaps make pull the trigger on a decision of that magnitude. There's been a lot of turmoil. There's no question that 911 would have short-circuited any internal disclosure process underway. I think that's a given. The Iraq War certainly delayed it. But again, I think the internal structures weren't going to do it anyway. I mean, they didn't have a president. I believe that H.W. Bush would have been acceptable to them, but he lost before they could make their move. I believe that Al Gore would have been acceptable to them. He very smart. He went to Vietnam. He was very knowledgeable about national defense issues, arms reduction, so forth, SALT treaties. Had a lot of contacts in the military. I think they'd have been happy with Al. They could work with him. I think that John Kerry would have been acceptable. Possibly Bob Dole. He was a elder statesman, war hero, aware of national security matters. He would have been acceptable. But as we know, all these people lost, right? And the two that won, Clinton and W. Bush, were not acceptable for various reasons, different between each man. But they had serious problems and serious flaws that made them highly suspect as someone that they could trust to handle this issue not only well, but and be open to their concerns. So the simple truth is that by 2008, disclosure had not taken place. Another country, for instance, had not moved unilaterally. And then we had a new election. And going into that election, as we moved into the fall, it became clear that the only three possible presidents who were going to emerge from this were McCain, Clinton, and Obama. And I looked at that. And I felt strongly that all three of them were okay. All three of them would have worked for them. With that being the case, then disclosure would be on the table. Obama won. And therefore, he will be the disclosure president.
Okay. And what happens if they don't disclose?
Well, If the United States doesn't disclose the ET presence, acknowledge the ET presence, another nation's going to do it. That's the most likely scenario. There is ample indication that other nations are breaking ranks with the U.S., taking their own actions, releasing documents, cooperating with UFO researchers and what have you. A dozen countries or more, industrialized countries, some second world countries like Mexico. So that's the first answer to that is, well, we don't disclose, someone else will. If nobody discloses, if these other countries continue to go along with this truth embargo for whatever reason, then we will continue down the road that we're on toward whatever is coming our way, and this issue will continue to be tabled. And in my view, one of two things will happen. We will finally drive off a cliff, right? And there will be rather nasty consequences from that. Or the ETs will force the issue. You won't do it. You've had ample opportunity. Okay. And they will do something dramatic, which will end the debate. Both of those scenarios are bad. If somebody nukes Washington, D.C., or a nuclear war breaks out between Pakistan and India, or if North Korea loses his mind, pick another scenario, whatever, then we're going to have some huge tumult in the 21st century, and it could get extremely ugly. If the ETs come down and force the issue, that effectively breaks the social contract that exists between every person and their nation worldwide. And that's going to be really damaging. The government will have not had the opportunity to divulge this to their own people. They would have failed in that obligation. They would be, shown to be bald-faced liars. The ETs will have made it quite clear there's nothing the government can do about their comings and going, thus reemphasizing the powerlessness of the state. And all of this breaks the social contract that people have. And we could expect a whole lot of bad behavior. And that's not going to be a good thing. So there's quite a bit at stake here. I think that enough people in government understand this that I just don't think this will happen. They have to disclose. They simply have to. They don't. I think they know they haven't got any choice.
And are ETs in contact with government? Do you think there is something going on there?
We get hints about it. We get the odd statement, the odd witness report. But I haven't seen a conclusive body of evidence that proves it. Wouldn't surprise me, but it hasn't been proven that there's formal contact between ETs and our government. It can be complex. For instance, there may be a report that someone has seen an ET in the presence of a military officer on a base in some particular year. All right, well, that's intriguing, to be sure, but just because there's an ET in the presence of a military officer doesn't mean that there's some formal engagement of our government by the ETs. We don't know what it means exactly, though it would be significant. So I don't know. And operate without that as a significant factor. I don't make it an issue. It'll be probably, I don't think we'll know what these arrangements are, if there are any, until after disclosure. We're not going to find out before disclosure takes place.
Okay. So we're coming up half an hour on the tape. I'll do half the synchronistic thing. Before
sure.
We get to the synchronistic part, I just want to ask you, what's your quintessential message that you want to put out, your message to the world and you want to share? I mean, do you have one?
Well, I don't have a message. I mean, I'm just an advocate pushing an issue. I'm not bringing a message to the world, but I am trying to raise the awareness of the fact that this truth embargo, which has been in place since at least 47, no longer serves the national interest, and we have got to get past it. And I'm trying to point out the benefits from that, the extraordinary technology we could use to address our issues. A renewal of trust in government that could lead to a reformist era, perhaps, and we could start shaking things up a little bit and cleaning up the house of state and the basement of state and whatever, and it would all be well and good, and it's long overdue, frankly. And that there may be some profound long-term benefits, such as a more global viewpoint on the part of people, more concerned about the planet, more tolerant of their own species. In other words, they view themselves more as a singular species and less as a bunch of disparate groups. And they view the planet as in fact their unique home in the galaxy. There are other homes out there, but this is yours. Keep it clean. Keep it safe. Take care of it. All of these are potentially right there in the future for us, as is formal open contact. But right now, we're still sitting on a highly volatile situation where stupid behavior is happening, could get worse, and we can't afford the luxury of misrepresenting reality, particularly at the state level, any longer. Not only on the ET issue, but on any issue. The government should get out of the reality distortion business altogether. They lie, yes, they lie about sometimes, you know, their campaign lies and their political lies about what they want to do or don't want to do. We understand that. But I'm talking about the formal misrepresentation of reality. In other words, the state comes out and says it's the official policy of this government that the world is flat. And anybody that says differently is either a fool or whatever, and we're going to double your taxes, whatever. That kind of nonsense. We have to get out of that business once and for all.
And finally, what's your website and how can people come in and join and show their support?
Well, paradigmresearchgroup.org. PARADIGM, a word that people need to learn how to spell because they're going to be seeing a lot of it in the future, is the main portal to a number of sites, including the PRG main site. And you go there and you can pretty much find out whatever you need. At least you can get a good taste of what's going on with links to thousands of links to other stuff.
Okay.